of the On-Farm Research Network at the University of Nebraska, and there are a number of people who are involved in this effort, as you'll see in the program. But I would like to recognize Keith Gluin and Nathan Mueller, who are both in the room and did contribute to the creation of this presentation. So first, as we get started, I'd like to just think about why are we interested in on-farm research within extension and why do we turn to this as a tool. So this graphic, I think, depicts fairly well the different levels of programming, different degrees of impact as we think about engaging learners. So along the bottom, we would have things like maybe in-person conversations and phone calls that might be cover a very broad base of topics, but maybe not as in-depth. And then as we move up into things like more in-depth articles, workshops, hands-on training, things like that that might go into deeper into a subject and hopefully generate more impact for learners. But we really feel like at the very pinnacle of this is participation in on-farm research. And that's because the producers who are participating in this research are taking a very active role in their own learning. And that generates a high degree of behavior change and a high degree of on-farm research in that light. So in Nebraska, how our on-farm research efforts began. In 1989, the Nebraska Soybean and Feed Grains Profitability Project was launched with 12 pilot growers. And this effort was initiated by Keith Gluin in Saunders County. And a graduate student was also on board to help evaluate on-farm research as a method of technology transfer. The producers were involved for a three-year commitment and generally evaluated an alternative production system to their current production system. And the members really were encouraged to identify their own comparison topic and identify something that was going to be of long-term importance to their operation, key agronomic questions for them. There was also involvement from private industry representatives that really helped to contribute their time and expertise annually. So the evaluation with the graduate student and these 12 pilot growers really found that this was a successful program and resulted in the impacts that we were looking for. So additional county-based efforts began in the 90s, and those were also successful. So in 2012, it was determined that these efforts would all be strengthened by bringing them together under one umbrella, which is the Nebraska On-Farm Research Network that we have today. So fast forwarding to where we're at today, we have great support within Nebraska Extension from our administration, and that's really been key in growing and improving the program through time. We also have excellent support from commodity organizations, which has been key in funding the project and continuing it. And then finally, Ag Media has been very key in our success as they've helped us to recruit participants in on-farm research and be another means of disseminating the research results. Currently, this was our numbers from last year. In 2015, we had 18 extension educators involved, 9 extension specialists, several graduate students, technicians, staff, and student workers. So a great group, a diverse group of people involved. And then looking at the number of studies completed, I think you can really see in 2012 the impact of combining our efforts and strengthening on involvement. And in 2015, had 80 studies completed that year. Cumulatively over the lifespan of the project, over 800 studies have been completed. So I'd now like to think a little bit about what a successful on-farm research network looks like and kind of talk you through the timeline of how we've been able to implement this in Nebraska. So first, our goal really is to provide a common venue statewide for producers, consultants, industry, commodity organizations, and UNL faculty to conduct on-farm research. So bringing the program together under one umbrella has really furthered our efforts to be that statewide impact. One of the keys to our project is to really focus on that strong farmer involvement. So the farmers are very active in the research. They're implementing the trials with their own equipment. They're collecting the data in their own equipment. And because of that, we designed the protocols to fit each farmer's situation, their unique experiences, growing, and also trying to tailor it to questions that are of interest to those growers, questions that will make a difference for their operation. We do encourage them to focus research on long-term agronomic challenges. There are a number of different products or things that could be tested. Really, we want people to focus as much as possible on things that are going to impact their bottom line long-term success of their operation. And then with our program, we also do focus to make sure that sound experimental design is used on each trial. So we will only report those studies that are randomized and replicated and followed all correct protocol. So along with that, we do work to make sure that these designs are statistically sound, but also feasible for the farmers to implement on their own operations. At the conclusion of the year, when we summarize research results, we have a meeting or several meetings each winter where we get together all the participants in the on-farm research along with general public. So other farmers, consultants, ag industry, and UNL faculty will be in attendance. And these have been some excellent opportunities for good agronomic discussion amongst the participants and others, sharing their expertise and discussing what those participants experienced. Usually there's about four locations that we hold in the winter where we go over those results and have about 250 in attendance. Along with that, as you can see at the bottom on those reports, we do try to include some financial aspect. So we want to make sure that we're allowing people to think not just at which treatment was maximizing yield, but what is the cost of implementing that treatment, and how is that going to impact their net return for using that treatment. So we try to tie in some net return component to each report. We also encourage attendees at the results meetings to base future management changes on multiple years of studies. So we try to tie in previous research, other site years that may have been done that year, and try to get people to look at a more broad picture. We found this program to really have a high degree of impact and significant behavior change. At some other winter meetings, we've been presenting on-farm research results to a general ag community, different producers, and crop advisors. And at a follow-up survey following that meeting where on-farm research data was presented, we asked them, did you implement these results from these on-farm research studies in your own operation? And we found that 80% did implement one or more of those on-farm research proven practices. So I think this really speaks to the perceived value of on-farm research. I also have a quote here from one participant that I think also speaks to that same thing. This individual said, "Research done on-farm is more believable for a lot of producers." So I think that's something to keep in mind as we do on-farm research, that there's value in seeing someone else do it, seeing your neighbor do it, and in doing it yourself. And there's just a lot of believability there for people. I also want to think about the local partnerships that we can create. This has been a very successful model for us for local educators in working with not only the farmer, but also trusted agribusiness partners in that region. So we think that this can be a very beneficial relationship when these individuals can come together around a common purpose. The extension educator can provide some coordination to the involved farmer and agribusiness partner. The trusted agribusiness partner would have technical expertise that they may be able to contribute about products. And then the extension educator can come in with that unbiased approach to help evaluate and that credibility to help answers that they're looking for. So we found this to be a really beneficial relationship and partnership for expanding our on-farm research efforts. We've also been able to partner with research and teaching faculty at the university and found this to also be a successful model. This is just one example where we were partnering with Bayer Crop Science and the UNL Plant Pathology Department and testing a product, Olivo, for treatment of sudden death syndrome on soybeans as a seed treatment. Bayer was able to provide product for testing and some financial aspect that helped us involve the Plant Pathology Department. And the Plant Pathology Department was really able to help provide technical expertise to be able to do some more in-depth research looking at things like soil sampling, disease progression, disease index, and the aerial imagery that you see there. And that's more in-depth than we maybe are able to go on a general on-farm research trial, but really allowed us to get a better response and why we're seeing a response. And I think that's more important to farmers as they think about How do they implement the results that they're seeing beyond that one field that they tested it in? They need to have a little bit more understanding of why the results are what they are so that they can implement that in other locations. So finally, I just want to talk about some challenges and opportunities as we move forward. And one of those is dealing with the enormous amount of data that we are generating. So in our efforts in 2015, 70% of the studies were recorded using a yield monitor. So we do have people submitting strip or weigh wagon data and yield monitor data. But I think the yield monitor data does present a lot of opportunities for us moving forward. One of those is the reduced time and hassle involved for farmers to not have to deal with weighing strips, and that, you know, is a big factor for some in their involvement. We can also accommodate some different research designs, such as this one shown here. We had a treatment which was administered through a center pivot into pie-shaped experimental units, and we were able to isolate the yield data points within those pie-shaped wedges to determine the treatment means. And that's just something that would be infeasible to do with a traditional strip trial. And we can also look at other spatial variables, bring in things like soils information. In this case, we were looking at different planting populations and how that impacted yield. But then we're able to bring that into different areas of the field where we had very different soils series within that same field and see how the response differed. And then finally, as I think others have mentioned today, the value of aggregating this data across years and locations. And I think that's only going to increase as we continue to collect data. There's also opportunities as we look at other spatial data layers. I've got satellite imagery on one side and some more fine resolution aerial imagery. Again, to help us just understand what's going on in those fields on the right where we were seeing SDS pressure within the field, helping us to, again, answer that question of why we were seeing the response that we were. So I think this is an exciting avenue going forward and something we're going to be exploring more in the next year, looking at imagery and UAV imagery. Along with this data, though, I think that there are also numerous challenges that go along with it. One is the time and skill required to deal with this data. Really, a program needs a dedicated individual or multiple individuals in order to be able to deal with and process all this data. And then there's also a skill required to be able to process, analyze, and make use of all the data. I think there's a lot of potential here, but really to make the most use of it, you need someone with specific skills. And then I think there's a question of data quality that we have to think about. Was the yield monitor calibrated? And I think that's a question that we have as we work with farmers. And then also cleaning the data. We have a procedure for cleaning the data that we get as raw data, but if the farmer does some of the processing on their own, what is the quality of the data that you're getting there? So finally, I just wanted to share a few resources that we have produced at Nebraska. These are publicly available, and you're welcome to access them. This one is a grower's guide to on-farm research. It has a lot of interactive features. Listen, read, watch videos to see how really basic guidelines of how to conduct on-farm research, how to randomize and replicate and things like that. Another resource, if I can get it back, is the results finder, and this allows you to search through our previously conducted trials, filter by year, crop, topic, or by a keyword and see different studies that have been conducted that meet that criteria. And then finally, our on-farm research app, which allows you to set up a trial and collect observations, and it'll help you randomize and replicate and get your trial set up. So with that, here's our contact information. Please contact us if you have any questions on our Twitter, and we'd love to connect with you. Thank you.
Groups and the growers
that our end goals have really aligned. We're able to look at things like nitrogen and be able to reduce nitrogen application that provide environmental benefits and maximize net return for growers. So I think there's some locations within that that can really, so I really don't think that we've had much difficulty in that avenue as of now. I don't know if you want to comment, Keith. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have 2 minutes, and if anyone has a question for any of the previous speakers, I know Dr. Holhauser didn't have a chance to answer any questions. Anyone here have something burning they'd like to ask? David, I was going to ask you a question. You chose plant pathology as a decision aid tool. And we have susceptible hosts, we have the right environment, and the pathogen. So which one of those three is the most challenging in developing a decision aid tool?
Which is the most challenging? The pathogen is almost always there. The one that we have is Cercospora blight. So it's usually there. I don't know if any of our varieties are resistant. There are differences in susceptibility between the varieties, but it's the environment. That's what we built the decision aid on, assuming that we do have a susceptible host, assuming that the disease is there.
What if the host mutates or develops resistance? Does that...
Well, the host is a soybean.
No, I meant the pathogen. I'm sorry, the pathogen.
Well, we've seen gradual decrease in the control of fungicide over the last 10 to 15 years. We can look at our data. We've lost our scrofularins for frog eye leaf spot, and it seems like the amount of control that they're giving for other diseases is gradually declining.
Yeah. Very good. Anything else? For the good of the cause. Rumor has it I was buying lunch. That is not true. With that, have a good afternoon. Thank you all for attending, and thank you again to all our speakers.